All right, it is Wednesday. It's a bit wet Wednesday. 5 p.m. time for American Hit Radio. 90.3 WHPC, WHPC HD in Garden City. I'm Tom Ryan, and my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, here as well, of course.
In the house.
In the house, running the board. It's going to be an ordinary Wednesday for us, because we're going to do what we've always been doing for quite a while. We choose a specific album. From one of two lists, the top 500 of the top 40 or the alternative top 40, each one representing 500 albums. One half of them are the hit albums and the other half are the not really quite hits, but still perhaps very influential or just plain excellent, according to my taste. And it's been a lot of fun doing this, and the fun continues. Now, right now, we are pretty much very close to the halfway mark of what we're doing. We're past the halfway mark on the top 40 side, and we're just beginning to catch up to there on the alternative side. The reason for that, by the way, just to explain it, is that since we've been doing these albums chronologically, in the 50s and 60s and even the early 70s, most of the albums that were being released charted, and the ones that were getting, you know, some sort of recognition were charting. It was over time, though, when all of a sudden, like, a lot of artists began to flood the market, and all of a sudden, getting into the top 40 was not an easy thing to do. And genres that weren't necessarily popular were still able to release albums on major labels and get distributed. If you look at, say, for example, where we're going now, like we're into the punk era and the new wave era, almost none of those albums made the top 40. So it's going to be in the next, I'd say, year or two of the shows that we start that we'll be covering when the alternative albums will catch up to where the hit albums are in terms of quantity. We're not there yet, but this album is going to be part of that push. Released in December of 1976, which surprises me. It did not chart at all. Didn't make the Billboard chart. That was not on the top 100. Didn't see the name anywhere on any list when it was released. And it's simply entitled Blondie. And the band, of course, is Blondie. Now, we all know Blondie, and Blondie became one of the biggest bands of their era and associated with more or less being responsible for a huge portion of what became New Wave. But here they are in 1976, before the term punk music was even being utilized. So they were well ahead of their time, and they were considered probably to be weirdos. It's just a weird band in 1976. And I know that popular attention always falls on Blondie's third album, Parallel Lines, mostly because that's the album that had their first big hit and thusly brought the band to the attention of the general populace. But in my opinion, it couldn't match the impact of hearing their first record for the first time. Hearing Blondie was a hoot when this album first came out. And it's hard to shake that off when you get that first impression. As far as debut records go, Blondie, the album, represented a near miraculous blend of energy and humor that sounded fresh and entertaining, even though it blatantly utilized familiar, even shop-worn elements. On first listen, the band sounded like some comic book invention, a fully formed oral version of Mad Magazine or something like that. Blondie grabbed from every element of New York's kitschy street culture, including doo-wop, girl groups, science fiction, surf music, B-movies, gang culture, catfights, sex, lots of sex, and then somehow crammed all of it into a package that fit comfortably within that burgeoning punk rock scene, which didn't really blow up yet, but they were there with bands like Television at CBGB, so they eventually got lumped into that. Now, Debbie Harry, obviously, as the lead singer, had sex appeal to spare, looking for all the world like a reformed Playboy bunny, which was a previous job of hers, actually, before she joined the band, who suddenly found herself caught up in downtown New York punk culture, a beautiful face in a world that strived to be crass and ugly. The band is great, too, but unfortunately rendered virtually faceless because of the magnetism that was exuded by Debbie Harry. For all that the general public cared, the band could have consisted of John, Paul, George, and Ringo, but all anybody saw was this gorgeous front woman acting out every schoolboy's juvenile rock and roll fantasy. The entire album was one gigantic cliche performed with tongue firmly in cheek. The fun never stops to take itself too seriously, which is great. And it's another reason why I prefer this album to their breakout record. Just about every song on Blondie, this album, their debut album, is a joke performed well enough to bring respect to the performance. Each subsequent album emulated the same formula, more or less, but strived harder and harder for mass acceptance, watering down the image until the humor got lost and the structure of the form holding things together became a little bit too obvious. When they hit the big time with songs like Heart of Glass, that was the big hit single on their third album, Parallel Lines, they got what they wanted. But the original spirit was dampened in the process. It was as if a great, obscure TV show suddenly added a laugh track to let everybody know how to react. Enveloped in a slinky disco beat, mass culture was able to swallow the joke or overlook it entirely. For this reason, I would argue that it is virtually impossible to acknowledge Parallel Lines as a great record without also acknowledging the fresh wit of the band's debut album, while the opposite is not necessarily true. By their fourth album, I mean, even the band forgot to bring their sense of humor, and the magic dissipated. But if you like Blondie at all, then it is essential to start at the beginning. So that's exactly what we're going to do today. Here's the opening track from their debut album entitled Blondie, featuring Debbie Harry as the lead vocalist. We'll talk about the rest of the band later. Their opening song is called Ex-Offender.
I saw you standing on the corner. You look so big and fine. I really wanted to go out with you. So when you smiled, I laid my heart on the line. You'd step in. I have to know, so I ask.
One thing I didn't mention about when I was saying that the album is, you know, like doo-wop, girl group, science fiction, B-movies and all that stuff, is the most obvious thing is that Blondie is such an American band. Their influences are so, like, based upon, like, American, you know, schlock culture. It's
like Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, it couldn't be anywhere else in the world. It's so obvious that they are Americans and working class New Yorkers. It's all there. You'll even hear it in her accent on some of the songs as she's singing. And I think it's just wonderful to hear that coming in December 1976. I mean, this is right on the heels of like when yacht rock is at its peak. We weren't calling it that yet. You know, it was just the Doobie Brothers and et cetera, were just, you know, they were rock and roll. That's what rock and roll had become. This just turned the tables a lot. You knew that there was a change in the air at this point in time. Now, that song, X Offender, was originally titled Sex Offender. But they knew that was going to be their first single. And there was like no way that the record label was going to let them do that, because that's like the kiss of death. So they changed it from Sex Offender to X Offender. And the single failed anyway. Now, I got a personal story. I'm talking too much. We'll play songs back to back so we can fit this all in. But this is really true. The very first label that Blondie was on when they released the single X Offender was called Private Stock. And I know that label well, because in 1977, after I had graduated from high school, I hooked up with a bunch of musicians who worked in Glen Cove, who were original songwriters. And it was my first original band where everybody was writing material. And they were very ambitious about trying to, you know, get a record contract. It was, you know, hey, we be famous, be like, you know, be a band. And, you know, it was obviously it's a cool thing to do. Now, it wasn't easy. And I'll be honest, when I look back, I'm thinking like the songs were nowhere near commercial enough, nowhere near like what Blondie's about. That's for sure. But the one label that really got interested in us was Private Stock. And Private Stock Records came to our shows and they were going to sign us. And the guy who was like managing this whole thing, I remember his name distinctly. It was Nino Tassone. We even wrote a silly song about him because he was hanging out around with us, whatever it was that we did. And they offered us a contract. What's weird about it is that his first instinct was to kick me out of the band. I'm not kidding, because he was like, you know, that drummer, I don't know, you know, it's something that people always do, kick out the drummer. It's like, it's such a typical thing to do. But then he started coming to our shows, and then he said, oh my God, you can't kick out the drummer. It seemed like, you know, I was the person who was at that point in time, like the crowd was into what I was doing. And so it saved my butt, because I think that he might have fired me otherwise. But I ended up being like the most, all of a sudden he was like, I was the guy that he wanted to talk to about getting the contract and everything. It was a total change. And when we all discussed it, we were afraid to do it. We didn't sign. We were so afraid that they were going to take advantage of us. And we just walked away. And I did not know at that point in time that Blondie had been on the label. That would have affected me immensely about saying, yes, we should do it. But hey, you're 18. I was terrified of going on tours and all that stuff. I said, oh my God, how would I handle that? I'll end up being a poor musician, like in the back of a van, you know, with five other guys going from college town to college town. So I blew it, totally blew it. Blondie did not. They ended up leaving Private Stock and signed with Chrysalis Records. And that's a big move, because Chrysalis had great distribution, really good, you know, commercial insight to what needed to be done. So when the album came out, eventually it moved from Private Stock to Chrysalis. And that's when the band really began to take off. But at this point, in the very beginning, when it first released, it was on Private Stock. There you go. A little personal. Sorry if I was off on a bit of a tangent there. Let's play another song from the album to get into the feel of this. It's called Little Girl Lies. Mm-hmm.
talking and laughing with six other guys, flirtatious and cute. She'll take you the route, tell it, little girl lies. He loves her so much, don't want to lose her. And there's no other girl he likes above it all. But he's not out tonight, we'll make it tomorrow. He's telling his little girl lies. That's how the little girl lies.
There's another quick one, Little Girl Lies, the second track on the album. Now, after talking about Private Stock, I have to say that Private Stock, in a sense, were very responsible for this album going nowhere. It just
Well, then you lost nothing by not signing with them.
That is probably 100% true. We would have had this, I don't know, this souvenir of it, but that would have been it. And it would have been maybe an embarrassing souvenir at that. But the band ended their contract. They were able to, I don't know how they were able to do that. Some, I guess they had a reasonably good deal to get out of the contract. And then they signed with Chrysalis Records in mid-1977. And so they re-released this first album at the same time as they were releasing their second album called Plastic Letters. And on that album, they also, with the new album and with the other album now beginning to get some recognition at least, they released a second single from this album. And it's this next song we're going to play called In the Flesh. Bondi, the album, when it got re-released on Chrysalis, went to number 14 in Australia. So that proved that it was working somewhere. Somebody was listening. And the song In the Flesh went to number 3. In Australia. Not here in America. We were still ignoring them. But it showed that something was positive was starting to happen. Here's that single that went to number 3 in Australia, In the Flesh.
To touch you in
just for the sexual innuendos, it's funny. You know, but the song itself is really well written. That was actually written by Debbie Harry and her husband, Chris Stein. I don't think that they wanted that to be publicly acknowledged in the beginning, that they were a husband and wife team, because there was so much attraction toward Debbie Harry as a sex symbol in the front of the band. But that's just a fact. And they were both writing together quite a bit and coming up with songs like In the Flesh. I could play one more from side one because we still have enough time to. Why not? This is another fun, upbeat tune, which pretty much the whole album is. It's called Look Good in Blue.
You look good in blue. Someone like you getting up on the lies, cause it does you surprise again. If it's alright with you, I could give you some head and shoulders to lie on. You look good in blue. I know what you mean when you say you've seen. Someone like you, been at it again. You knew what was up in the air. If it's alright with you, I could give you some head and shoulders to lie on. Throw your weight on me, baby. Don't complain on me, baby. Saving me, next to me. Look good in blue. It matches your skin, your eyes dripping with pain. If it's alright with you, I could give you some head and shoulders to lie on. Yes, I could give you some head and shoulders to lie on.
Yeah, talk about sexual innuendos. That song's got a pretty major one in there when they mention what sounds like shampoo, but it isn't. I would just leave it at that. Everybody in the band wrote songs. I don't see any credits for the drummer getting... Clement Burke is the drummer, and he's an amazing drummer. He's great. I have I was in awe of him at the time because he had a really great sense of speed, really excellent dynamics, and just a very tight guy, you know, in terms of the way that he played. Kind of flawless. Met him once, and he was very cool. I believe he passed. I'm not sure, but I think he did, to be honest. I should look that up. But everybody else in the band was writing songs, sometimes as a solo. Like that song, Look Good in Blue, was written by Jimmy Destri, who was the band's organ player, or piano player, any keyboard, let's put it at that. And the rest of the band member is Gary Valentine on bass guitar, who also wrote the song. That wasn't Gary Valentine. Yes, it was. Gary Valentine wrote Ex-Offender with Debbie Harry. And that's pretty much how that happened. And that leaves the other two members, of course, being Debbie Harry and Chris Stein. So, before we play the next track, let me remind you that you're listening to WHPC, WHPC HD, Garden City, New York. The show is American Hit Radio. And if this is new to you, welcome aboard. Wow, where you been? You've been here for quite a while. I'm glad I wasn't holding my breath if you're brand new. But you're 100% welcome. Glad you're listening. It's the more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned, of course. And we are presently playing the debut album from Blondie, simply entitled Blondie. It's like a nonstop hit fest with a bunch of songs that were never hits. And let's play one more, which would have been, actually, we want to play two back-to-back. This way we'll end what would have been considered side one of the album. The first track we'll play is called In the Sun, and then it'll go into a song that touches off on a theme that I think you'll be familiar with. It's called A Shark in Jet's Clothing.
rock,
shaking up my bones and crawling through our veins. We always met at the edge of a blade and we left at the end of the fight. Of all the girls you played and you made, why did this one have to be white?
Shark and Jet's clothing before that.
DTK.
Yeah, I didn't
Don't
know we're talking
out.
About
DTK.
That.
DTK.
That lyric came up and we're looking at each other. Heidi said to me, what does that mean? And I'm like, what does what mean? Because I don't think I ever really paid attention to that lyric. Don't go out DTK. And I'm like, oh, dressed to kill. Don't go out dressed to kill, because it's a song about wearing the wrong clothes in the wrong neighborhood. Well, that ends side one, which, believe it or not, is quite literally, that would be the serious side of the album. Most of the songs, I would say, on side one are actually, although a lot of fun, compared to side two, which is seriously funny. I mean, the songs on side two are just more or less, just each one is more or less meant to, like, basically, not to be a knee slapper or anything like that, but to enough to make you laugh or giggle about it. The thing is, the critics at around this time were saying that, oh my God, you know, you guys are like a real blowback to the old girl bands and stuff like that. And it made sense that people would say that because their producer was Richard Goddard. And Richard Goddard is the guy who did a lot of that, you know, girl group stuff in the 50s and the 60s. So he's using his knowledge there to, you know, give Blondie a similar sound. But Debbie Harry said that she never considered the band retro. That didn't even occur to her. So when people started saying that about the band, she said that it was like, quote, quite a shock for people to think that. So, I mean, as far as she was concerned, they were playing new wave music, something that was like a new idea for rock and roll. Ultimately, she was correct. But they did it by basically pulling from a lot from that genre. Okay, I said side two is the seriously funny side. So let's get started. The first track on side two is this one. It's called Man Overboard.
Ooh, 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 ooh,
Overboard. First track on side two. Who are you going to say hi to? You were saying something about that song in Long Island?
Oh, no. I say the next song.
Oh, the next song. Oh, I get that. I think the next song is my favorite song on the album. I think it's the funniest song on the album. Yeah, it's basically about a catfight, really. So I think, you know, when Heidi first came to... Well, you can tell that story. I don't think it's appropriate for me to tell it. And you don't think you can tell us in five or 10 seconds, because this is a story that could go on for maybe 3 or 4 hours. But
no,
we won't.
That's
do
fine.
That.
That's all right. What do you want to say? It's, I know what New York ladies can be like. That's what I'll say.
Oh, you're talking about the time when like those girls like pushed you away from me at the bar, probably.
Oh, there are so many numerous times. But no, the first line is, would you look at her hair?
It's perfect. This, I love this song. It's called Rip Her to Shreds.
Hey, here she comes now. We'll be right back.
That's a tough crowd.
It makes me laugh out loud. It's so funny because she's so good at playing a character. She wrote that song with her husband, Chris Stein. That's the songwriting team for Rip Her to Shreds. What I love about it is, I mean, as a front woman, Debbie Harry could be dry, sardonic, a bit obnoxious and effete, but never, I mean, really, never condescending. She made it obvious that she was like one of us, ordinary people. She's sort of like the girls in the Shangri-Las from the 60s. With like, you can never go home anymore. And, you know, those girls. You could relate to her. And that had so much to do with the eventual appeal that the band was able to attract. It's too bad that it didn't hit them right away, because this album was, it's a bit of a masterpiece in the style that it's going for. And the humor keeps up on side two. This next track is rather strange. It's called Rifle Range.
I guess she did her own backing vocals on that.
Well, you know, she probably did, because there's no other credits. It's just the band. So yeah, Richard Goddard would have her doing her own backing harmonies. I mean, this album is a conundrum, because there's almost nothing about it that you could say that is extraordinarily new. And yet, it was completely new for this period of time in the mid-70s, this music style. There was nothing on the radio like this at all. It was like Elvis Costello called it Moods for Moderns. I mean, it was a hip record. It was a totally like a new style for considering the seriousness. So you've heard all the albums that we've played coming up to this point. This is like something that's just like basically a shot in the dark coming out of nowhere. And here's another funny song. It's called Kung Fu Girls.
Chinatown, the year of the cop. He sold a silver bell, put it in hot. Full of money, mouth full of gold. Soon to be free of all. Ah, the world. She was a kung fu girl, kung fu girl. And he got the address of Liza and Kennedy's. And asked the natives some assistance, please. She took him to the secret door. Get on now. What happened next caused quite a shock. But she was standing looking at the door. He went to the floor. Damn it, much more. She was a kung fu girl, kung fu girl.
Awesome. All right, we pretty much made it through the whole album except for the last track, which is a weird one. It's called The Attack of the Giant Ants. I think it pushes the humor button a little bit too much, perhaps. It's the only song on the album that I would consider silly, but whatever. 10 out of 11 is not bad. So, you know, it's a great album. So, you know, I hope, you know, this is the way it goes out. It is what it is.
Nod to, you know, the old movies, those silly, like
science fiction,
yeah, the Killer Tomatoes, or those things.
It fits that perfectly. All right, folks, hope you enjoyed this. See you next week, or maybe even on Friday at 5 if you can join us then. We're covering Pink Floyd. Take care.
Space, snuff the human race, defend the ancient beast.
Thanks again. See you next week. Bye-bye.
What an electrifying episode of American Hit Radio.
Electrifying? It was straight up fly to the max.
I'm just so sad that it's over.
Aww. Don't be sad, because this show on 90.3 WHPC is brought to you by AmericanHitNetwork.com.
What the heck is AmericanHitNetwork.com?
On AmericanHitNetwork.com, you can listen to archived shows of American Hit Radio, check out playlists, interviews, album reviews, and learn how music shaped the world.
Okay, that actually does sound fly to the max.
Don't steal my catch.